Let's push into another week of our 4.5 year verse-by-verse journey through all of God's inspired word by opening to Judges chapter 9, where we're going to pick up the story at verse 26. We're kind of right in the middle of the story of Abimelech, the illegitimate son of Gideon, who is also the illegitimate first king of Israel. His father, Gideon, had turned down the kingship offer that was given to him at the beginning of his judgeship. But somewhere in the 40 years that Gideon was serving as judge, his mind must have changed a little bit. Because when he had this son by his concubine from Shechem, he gave him the name Abimelech, which means, "My daddy is king." And so once dad was dead, Abimelech carried on basically a coup against all of his legitimate half-brothers, killing 70 of them there at the hometown, and then taking over as the king of Israel. Now, his ruling area is basically right around the Jezreel Valley and south into the hill country of Manasseh, down toward Shechem. And Shechem put him on the throne, the Shechemite people, his mom's people, put him on this illegitimate throne. But we were told at the end of the section we finished last episode that the Shechemites, once the guy took control, were not so much in it. They were even waylaying people on the highways and stealing things that probably would have gone to Abimelech himself. And so that brings us to verse 26, that more than likely happens the later in the year after Abimelech seized control. It says, Gaal, the son of Ebed, moved into Shechem with his relatives, and the leaders of Shechem put confidence in him. Now, this Gaal guy does not seem to be an ethnic Israeli. He seems to somehow be related to the ethnic group that was originally at Shechem back in the days when Jacob was sojourning there. And so this guy is more interested in having a throwback to the Canaanite leadership here at Shechem. And the Shechemites seem to be on board with that. So they went out into the field, they gathered the grapes from their vineyards, trod them, and held a festival. So the grape harvest happens in the summertime, and then there is supposed to be the Feast of Tabernacles shortly after that, at the end of summer, beginning of fall. And so my guess is that they're still observing the Feast of Tabernacles, but these guys have got a twist on it because of their religion. It says, they went to the house of their God, and they ate, and they drank, and they reviled Abimelech. Now, the house of their God is the shrine of Baal, who is a substitute for he who is, Berit, which is covenant. And so this is a reference to that shrine building that grew up over the top of the standing stones that had the covenant written on them. All of that took place in the first year Israel was in the land, with Joshua leading in the blessing and the cursing ceremony, right smack here at the Shechem area. And so these guys have twisted everything on its head, and they are worshiping Baal Berit, God of the Covenant, at that site. And in this case, they've gone in there and they've started trash-talking Abimelech. Gaal, the son of Ebed, said, "Ah, who's Abimelech? Who are we of Shechem that we should serve him? Is he not the son of Yerubbaal?" That's Gideon's nickname. "Is not Zebul his officer? Serve the men of Hamor, the father of Shechem. But why should we serve him?" So Hamor is the name that goes way back in time to Jacob's period and the original leader at Shechem. And so that's why I believe that Gaal is probably from that Canaanite line, and he wants Shechem to basically be recovered into Canaanite hands rather than being under this Israeli king. Verse 29, "Would that this people were under my hand, then I would remove Abimelech. I would say to Abimelech, increase your army and come out." So he makes a pitch for him to actually be the king of Shechem and the Shechem city-state area, and that if they would just back him on this, that he would challenge Abimelech to come out and fight. Verse 30, "When Zebul, the ruler of the city, heard the words of Gaal, the son of Ebed, his anger was kindled." Now, he's the guy that's running things at Shechem on behalf of King Abimelech. So he's mad when he finds out that this is going on over at the shrine of Baal Berit. "He sent messengers to Abimelech secretly, saying, 'Behold, Gaal the son of Ebed and his relatives have come to Shechem, and they are stirring up the city against you. Now therefore, go by night, you and the people who are with you, set an ambush in the field. Then in the morning, as soon as the sun is up, rise early, rush upon the city, and when he and the people who are with him come out against you, you may do to them as your hand finds to do.'" So he urges his patron, his king, to come and deal with these guys in a covert manner. Abimelech seems to believe that that's a good idea. Verse 34, "So Abimelech, all the men who were with him, rose up by night. They set an ambush against Shechem in four companies." So they got four individual fighting forces. "Gaal, the son of Ebed, went out and stood at the entrance of the gate of the city." Now I'm going to just go out on a limb here. I believe it is likely that the major gate of the city of Shechem faced westward. Because Shechem is on the east side of this narrow valley that passes westward between Mount Ebal on the north and Mount Gerizim on the south. And so I think Gaal comes out and he's looking down that corridor, down that alleyway that is between the two mountains that form shoulders above Shechem. The name for Shechem means shoulders. So he's looking out, and the people who were with Abimelech, they rose up from their ambush. They've been hanging out on the hillsides and in the corridor that is between those two mountains. When Gaal saw the people moving, basically, he said to Zebul, "Look, people are coming down from the mountaintops." Zebul said to him, "You mistake the shadows of the mountains for men." So Zebul is like, "Nah, you're just seeing things." Gaal spoke again and said, "Look, people are coming down from the center of the land. One company's coming from the direction of the diviner's oak. Now, I am of the conviction that the diviner's oak is another name for that great big tree that is sitting right next to the shrine building of Baal Berit. And I believe that that is at the foot of Mount Ebal, and therefore it would be kind of on the north side of this alleyway, this valley that is between the two mountains that Gaal is looking westward through. And so he sees people coming off the mountains. He sees people coming toward the city of Shechem down this alleyway from the direction of the little shrine building. That's when Zebul said to him, "Where is your mouth now, you who said, 'Who is Abimelech that we should serve him?' Are not these the people whom you despised? Go out now and fight with them." So now that it is obvious that there is a military force, several elements of a military force, moving toward the city of Shechem, coming for Gaal, Zebul doesn't see a reason to hide his own appreciation of what they're about to do, his complicity in this fighting force. He says, "Why don't you go out there and fight them like you said you could?" So Gaal went out at the head of the leaders of Shechem and fought with Abimelech. Abimelech chased him. He fled before him. Many fell wounded up to the entrance of the gate. And then Abimelech lived at Aruma, and Zebul drove out Gaal and his relatives so that they could not dwell at Shechem. So the battle does not go well for Gaal. He gets chased out of the region. It does not go well for the Shechemites who were supporting Gaal. This breaks the little rebellion. Verse number 42. On the following day, the people went out into the field, and Abimelech was told. Now, they're going out probably to take care of business, is what I'm guessing. But Abimelech is still in the mode of punishing them. So he took his people, divided them into three companies, and set an ambush in the fields. And he looked and he saw the people coming out of the city. So he rose against them and killed them. Abimelech and the company that was with him rushed forward. They stood at the entrance of the gate of the city while the two companies rushed upon them who were in the field and killed them. And Abimelech fought against the city all that day. He captured the city and killed the people who were in it, and he razed the city and sowed it with salt. So Abimelech feels that the Shechemite revolt against him. Remember, these guys had supported him to become the king because of his mom being from Shechem. He feels that this rebellion, this betrayal is so bad that everybody at the city needs to die. The city needs to die. It needs to be burned to the ground and the debris moved out of the way, and any open ground needs to have salt thrown on it to make it where it can't grow crops for a good long time. That's pretty serious. Now, verse 46 tells us that when the leaders of the Tower of Shechem heard of it, they entered the stronghold of the house of El Berit. So here's some more Shechemites who are not, they are not connected with the city as much as they are with that shrine building, because El Berit is just another way of saying Baal Berit. El is just God, while Baal is Lord. So we're still talking about the twisted use of that special shrine area put in place by Joshua several hundred years earlier. But now we find out not only is it like a shrine building, it's actually fortified. It has some walls around it, and it apparently has a tower attached to it that is named after the city that is nearby. So these guys locked themselves in to the Tower of Shechem that is part of the Baal Berit shrine complex. Verse 47, Abimelech was told that all the leaders of the Tower of Shechem were gathered together, so he considers them to be threats as well. Abimelech went up to Mount Zalmon. Now, Mount Zalmon is probably just another name for either Ebal or Gerizim. It has something to do with Dark Mountain, okay, the Dark Mountain. So he and all his people who are with him, they go up on this mountain, which would have been just above the Baal Berit or El Berit complex, the Tower of Shechem. Abimelech took an axe in his hand. He cut down a bundle of brushwood, and he took it and laid it on his shoulder. He said to the men who were with him, "What you've seen me do, hurry, do as I have done." So every one of the people cut down his bundle, and following Abimelech, they put it against the stronghold, and they set the stronghold on fire over them, so that all the people of the Tower of Shechem also died, about 1,000 men and women. So apparently this complex is not just simply stone. It is made up of combustible materials. Perhaps it's a wooden stockade sort of thing, a palisade of big tree trunks and things. But they take these bundles of firewood, lay it around the exterior of the complex, set it afire, burn the place to the ground, including the people inside it. That is the end of the shrine of the covenant that Joshua had actually established at Moses' command, at God's command, several hundred years earlier. Verse 50. Then, and we don't know exactly when this happens, Abimelech went to Thebez. He encamped against Thebez and captured it. Now, Thebez is a few miles north of Shechem. And apparently, it becomes another place of rebellion against Abimelech. And he can't allow that. So he goes there. In verse 51, there was a strong tower within the city. All the men and women and all the leaders of the city fled to it. They shut themselves in, and they went up to the roof of the tower. So they retreat back into their fortified position in their city, back into their tower, and you've got people up at the top kind of keeping an eye on what's going on down below. Well, Abimelech's already dealt with a rebel force that retreated into a tower before, so he tries the same way of dealing with them. Abimelech came to the tower, fought against it, drew near to the door of the tower to burn it with fire. Now, this tower, I believe, seems to be more substantial than the tower that was at the shrine of Baal Berit near Shechem. This tower may have been made of stone or clay brick. But the door is made of wood. So they bring their bundles of flammable material up to this door in it that would gain them entrance into the tower, and they set that stuff afire. Verse 53, a certain woman threw an upper millstone on Abimelech's head and crushed his skull. Now, an upper millstone in this case is part of a hand mill. You'd have a good flat stone as its base, and then there'd be like a little wooden spindle that's coming up out of the center of that stone. And then an upper millstone would be situated down over that spindle, and there'd be a little handle that was attached to the upper millstone, and you'd drop the grain down the center and just turn the upper millstone around and around and around on that spindle, and the powdered flour would come out of the edges because of gravity feed pressure. Well, this is probably up on top of the tower as a place to make bread. There's probably an oven and everything up there. And so this woman, realizing what's going on down below, well, she doesn't want to allow them to burn open the door and come up and get them all. So she just grabs the first thing she can think of that's heavy, which is this upper millstone, and she tosses it over the side. And it whacks Abimelech right on the noggin. Now, I don't know if he was wearing any type of head armor. Wouldn't have mattered, though. This thing cracked his skull open. And he realized that it was a mortal wound. He's not going to survive this. He is going to die. So, verse 54, he called quickly to the young man, his armor bearer. So, someone younger than him that's kind of associated with taking care of his weapons and his armor and being his lieutenant. He says, "Draw your sword and kill me, lest they say a woman killed him." So he doesn't want to die and have the story be that a non-combatant killed him. Women didn't participate in fights, in wars, in battles. And so the idea that he was killed by a civilian, he can't stand dying knowing that that's what they would be talking about. So he says, "I want you to give me a military death. I want you to stab me." And so his young man thrust him through and he died. And then, of course, comes the judgment for him. When the men of Israel saw that Abimelech was dead, everyone departed to his home. So he was a tyrant. He was a dictator. He was an autocrat. And once he is gone, his whole organization falls apart. Then the author of the book of Judges, probably a prophet, says, "Thus God returned the evil of Abimelech, which he committed against his father in killing his 70 brothers. And God also made all the evil of the men of Shechem return on their heads, and upon them came the curse of Jotham, the son of Yerubbaal." Remember, Jotham was the only one that survived in the massacre of Gideon's sons being killed by Abimelech, and he made a prophecy that fire would come out from the bramble king Abimelech and burn up the people of Shechem. And that's exactly what happened to them in the story here that we read. But then Abimelech ends up being burned up by the Shechemites. In this case, metaphorically, he gets killed and he's off the scene. And all that happened in a very short period of time, 3 calendar years. So part of year 1, part of year 3, and a full year in between. And then he's gone. Now, chapter 10 tells us about the next 2 judges that rise up in Israel. And I am of the opinion that upon the death of Abimelech, one judge is lifted up on the east side of the Jordan, and another judge is lifted up on the west side of the Jordan. So I believe these two guys are contemporaneous. So chapter 10, verse 1 says, after Abimelech, there arose to save Israel Tola, the son of Pua, son of Dodol, a man of Issachar. And he lived at Shamir in the hill country of Ephraim. So he's on the west side of the Jordan. He's in the same area where Abimelech has just been causing all his trouble. And so he judged Israel 23 years, and then he died, and he was buried at Shamir. Now, his contemporary on the other side of the Jordan is mentioned next, verse 3. After him arose Yair the Gileadite, who judged Israel 22 years. So he's in Gilead on the east side of the Jordan. He had 30 sons who rode on 30 donkeys, and they had 30 cities called Havaot Yair to this day, which are in the land of Gilead. And then Yair died and was buried in Kamon. So you've got the guy in Ephraim going 23 years. You've got the guy in Gilead going 22 years. And in the next story, we find out that when Israel sins, the trouble starts on the east side of the Jordan after Yair has died, but it moves to the west side of the Jordan after Tola died the following year. And so this is the story of the rise of the next judge after them, after a period of oppression. Go ahead and mark your Bibles. We'll get back here the next time God gives us opportunity to get into His Word.